Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, NJOHSP, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states, unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. Although it is produced every month, we aim to stay on top of current events and will often offer additional content. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show note and on our website, www.njohsp.gov. In November 2015, NJOHSP and the New York State Intelligence Center, along with the New Jersey Regional Intelligence Academy and McLaughlin, hosted a one-day seminar joining together Clint Watts, Dr. William McCants, J.M. Berger, and Seamus Hughes to discuss the current threat of violent extremists and how law enforcement and homeland security professionals may counter it. NJOHSP analysts had the opportunity to interview these experts and engage in valuable dialogue surrounding a variety of terrorism-related topics.
My name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I'll be talking to Seamus Hughes, who is the Deputy Director of the Program on Extremism at George Washington University's Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. Mr. Hughes has previously worked at the National Counterterrorism Center, serving as a lead staffer on the U.S. government's effort to implement the National Countering Violent Extremism Strategy. He's created a groundbreaking intervention program to help steer individuals away from violence through non-law enforcement means and work closely with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces, Fusion Centers, and U.S. Attorney's Offices. Mr. Hughes, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
So, could you briefly describe for us the current state of countering violent extremism here in the United States?
Yes. So in 2011, the administration released their Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE, strategy called Empowering Local Partners to Prevent Violent Extremism. And it essentially had three parts. The first part was we need to get better at understanding the threat. So fusion centers and places like that are a great place to get information out to state and local authorities. So let's understand radicalization and terrorism, and let's push that out to the local field. The second part of it was let's enhance engagement with communities that are being targeted by violent extremist groups for radicalization recruitment. And the third part was countering the propaganda. So how do we enhance local partners, Muslim Americans and others that want to do counter-messaging? How do we give them the tools to be able to do those type of things?
So in addition to trying to de-radicalize individuals, is there any work or research on the possibility of creating alternatives to radicalization in order to prevent individuals from radicalizing in the first place?
Sure. So the administration has essentially a two-pronged approach. One is a broad-based engagement. So it's incumbent on the federal government and state and locals to provide information to the public and communities about the threat. So they do a series of briefings, something like a community awareness briefing, which is an unclassified threat briefing about how groups like ISIS or white supremacist groups use the internet to radicalize and recruit. You get the information to parents so they can be armed and have conversations with their young people about these issues. So that's the broad-based type of engagement, and the engagement that happens all the time. So the U.S. Attorney's Office is meeting with communities on a regular basis on a wide range of issues, but also the local beat cop who's, you know, in the community and having these conversations. The second part of that is more of a targeted approach. So how do you set up an intervention program? So if you have a kid that you're worried about that's radicalizing to violence, what type of safety net can you set up to bring him back from the brink before he crosses that legal threshold, and then your only option is arrest?
Now, CVE, most of the talk about countering violent extremism program has been used in conjunction with ISIS or going a little further back with Al-Qaeda-related inspired extremists. Is there a role for CVE in domestic terrorism, and if so, what might that look like?
There's absolutely a role on CVE for domestic terrorism. The administration, when they released the strategy, said the preeminent threat was Al-Qaeda and ISIS-inspired terrorism, but they also said we should look at all forms of terrorism. And the way to expand that is to look at models that have been around for years. So there's organizations like Life After Hate that works with former white supremacists who are out of the movement, and they're moving into white supremacist groups and trying to pull people back in the edge. There's a lot of programs in terms of gang prevention, things like that, where you can apply the lesson you learn on the broader CVE into those subsets.
I suspect a lot of agencies at the state and local level are hoping for like a DARE-like program for CVE that can sort of be a cookie-cutter approach that applies everywhere. Back in June, you wrote a paper for the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University, and you indicated that to be effective, CVE really needs to be tailored on a case-by-case basis. So is it possible to reconcile those two things? Can we have a national program and also a very local program?
Absolutely. So I would do a national program to set the broad-based understanding of the threat and get that information out. What I would advocate for is to focus on a localized approach when it comes to individual cases. For the example, for ISIS, you have 250 Americans who have traveled to or have attempted to travel to places like Syria and Iraq. That's an overwhelming number for local law enforcement trying to wrap their arms around from a resource perspective. You can't put two guys in a van running 8-hour shifts watching a guy until and if he does commit an illegal act. So how do you set up programs to reach that kid to bring him back from the edge? I would advocate that we should move towards a more localized approach and a more case-focused approach, because you can then measure effectiveness. You can know, okay, well, this is a program we set up. It looks like it had the wherewithal to help bring individuals from crossing that legal threshold, and thus we can adjust it as we need to for next cases.
Awesome. And then I was wondering if you could talk maybe about one or two cases of notable successes for CVE, and maybe even a failure or sort of something that didn't work out as well as planned that you know of.
Sure. Let's, again, look in that rubric of broad-based versus interventions. So for a broad-based example, I would point to this time last year, I was in Denver, Colorado, because three girls, a 17, a 16, and a 15-year-old girl, had jumped on a plane bound for Syria. They got stopped at Frankfurt and got turned around because their father had called every phone number in the Colorado phone book until he finally found an FBI agent who was able to bring those back. After that, the imam of the mosque called me and said, you know, Seamus, I don't understand what happened. I don't understand why three of my young girls decided to do this. Can you come talk to my congregation about, you know, how ISIS radicalizes and recruits? So we flew out there with a team. We had presentations with the mosque, 200 people in a room. But that's the start of a conversation. That's the first initial push. The next one is, how do you build trust in the communities to have the longer conversations about setting up individual intervention programs and things like that. I would see that as a success, where the community is actively asking for help, and law enforcement and the federal government is able to provide that type of broad-based approach. And then the other thing I would look at is focused intervention programs. There's a program in Montgomery County, Maryland, run by an organization called WORD, where they've set up essentially an intervention program. They bring in mental health professionals, social workers, school officials, some local police officers, and the communities and the public will nominate a person that they're concerned about. So I'm concerned that this kid seems to be going down a wrong path. How do I bring him back? You look at the situation, you say, these are the tools we should apply for this. Because at the end of the day, it's not always going to be a law enforcement approach. He may have mental health issues that need to be addressed. There may be issues happening at home or issues of bullying at school that where a board of professionals can kind of decide what the best approach is to do that.
Great. Seamus Hughes, thank you very much.
I appreciate your
time.
Appreciate it.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.